up as a trophy of his victory. Wow. And he passed on and he went down to Gilgal. And Samuel came to Saul and said to him, "Blessed are you of the Lord. I have performed what the Lord ordered." So he lied. And Samuel said, "What then means the bleating of the sheep in my ears and the lowing of the oxen that I hear?" Saul said, "Well, they have brought them from the Amalekites, for the people spared the best of the sheep and the oxen, and this is the topper to sacrifice them to the Lord." Mm-hmm. Now we're going to pretend like we did it for God. When we're doing the thing that God told us not to do, we turn around and we're doing it for God. But the rest we've utterly destroyed. Then Samuel said to Saul, "Stop. I don't want to hear any more of it. I will tell you what the Lord said to me tonight." Saul said, "Say on." And Samuel said, "When you were small in your own sight, were you not made the head of the tribes of Israel? And the Lord anointed you king over Israel. So when you humble yourself, then God can lift you up." So he said, when you were small in your own sight, God was able to promote you. And the Lord sent you on a mission and said, "Go and utterly destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they're consumed. Why then did you not obey the voice of the Lord, but swoop down upon the plunder and did evil in the Lord's sight?" Saul said to Samuel, "Yes, I have obeyed the voice of the Lord." Yeah, he was self-deceived. He probably really wasn't believing his own lies. Sometimes that's the only way you can do that. "And I've gone the way which the Lord sent me, and I have brought Agag, king of Amalek, and have utterly destroyed the Amalekites." Well, he just was not facing truth. And he lost his kingdom because of it. And he started out humble, and God promoted him. And then all of a sudden, he probably started looking around at all this. And all the devil has to do is slip one little, "Look at what you've built. Just look at what you've done." Huh? We don't do that. I hope none of you do either. But we pull in the driveway here. We thank God. Can't believe it. God's letting us do this. Wow. And really, you know, I might even go so far as to say, even anybody who works here should, when you drive in, you should thank God that you work here. When you're loved and cared for, and you know if you have a problem that people are going to gather around you and help you. In 1 Timothy 3:1-6, he gives a pretty long list of qualities that a person has to be a leader. "The saying is true and irrefutable. If any man eagerly seeks the office of bishop, superintendent, or desire, he desires an excellent task." So it's not wrong to want to be in a position where you can help more people or where you can lead. A lot of people are created for leadership and they're just going to want that. "So a bishop, a superintendent, an overseer must give no grounds for accusation, but must be above reproach. The husband of one wife." I don't know exactly what that was referring to. Maybe there were still multiple marriages then. Or could be talking to divorce with no right reason. "Circumspect and temperate, he must be self-controlled." "He must be sensible and well-behaved and dignified and lead an orderly, disciplined life." "He must be hospitable, showing love for and being a friend to the believers, especially strangers or foreigners, and be a capable and qualified teacher. Not given to wine, not combative, but gentle and considerate, not quarrelsome, but forbearing and peaceable, not a lover of money, insatiable for wealth, and ready to obtain it by questionable means." You know, when you get in a place of authority, and I think we've seen this suddenly in our government, you know, when you have authority over a lot of money, it's not too hard to slip some of it into your own pocket if that's a what you're going to do. And over the years that we've been in ministry, which is 49 now, only on three occasions too many, we had somebody that worked for us steal from us. We stole all the offerings. And I can tell you, all three of them were people that we would have never, in our wildest imagination, thought we would do that. But money has drawing power. You know, it can make you justify things that you know. One of them said, well, I wasn't stealing it. I was just borrowing it. I was going to pay it back. And I forget what the other ones were, but what a shame to steal out of God's money. I mean, if you're going to steal from anybody, I certainly wouldn't make it God. Amen. He must rule his own household well, keeping his children under control with true dignity, commanding their respect in every way, and keeping them respectful. Well, that's a little bit of a chore these days, isn't it? For if a man does not know how to rule his own household, how can he possibly take care of the church of God? He must, and I love this, this is my favorite part, he must not be a new convert, or he may develop a beclouded and a stupid state of mind. I like what the Amplified says, he may become stupefied. Why? Because when you're a brand new believer, you don't have enough spiritual maturity to handle that. And the thing that concerns me is sometimes somebody comes into the church and goes, I've got a great musical gift. The next thing you know, they're on the platform. And that's just really not good. We need to give them some time and watch them and teach them and train them. And I've seen too many people completely fall into sexual sin, fall into all kinds of sin. Some have been very popular and they're on the road all the time, traveling, and they don't have the spiritual maturity to stay away from temptation. And sometimes the trouble that people get into are the fault of the leaders that are over them, because we have a responsibility to watch over them and make sure that, as far as we know, they're staying on the right track. How many of you agree with that? It's not. A lot of people have enough charisma to take them somewhere, but not enough character to keep them there once they get there. And it's great to have a gift, but you got to have some character to go with it. Otherwise, you should just sit down and be quiet. Many powerful men and women should have fallen due to pride. They let the praises of men cloud their thinking, and they forget they're nothing without God. Now, humility is maintained by a complete and continual dependence on God. No matter how long you've been in a walk with God, no matter how mature you think you are, my advice is start every day with God, telling him you're nothing without him. You need him in everything you do. I hope and pray that I have never come
Come on, yeah. Man. Yeah. Amen. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Period.
So I encourage you, if when Jesus was in the upper room, try to think about us. Do you know that God had that forgiveness? I just died.
Right.
I am not eating. He just died. He's not here because of his husband. When he died, the Bible says the temple curtain from the top to the bottom was torn, ripped. People said, oh, my gosh, this must have really been some time, because the whole earth turned black where they were at. Everything was dark. But then I had to figure out, God, what's coming up? Day long in the grave, nothing. And then I was in the grave, it was in hell. Day two, nothing. Day three, I didn't know why. I didn't.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Veterans Day to all the brave men and women who served in our armed forces. We appreciate you greatly, and we thank you for sacrificing and putting your lives on the line to keep us free. There has never been another nation like the United States, and that fact is driven home every day by the madness we see in other parts of the world. What about Nigeria, where Muslim jihadists have massacred at least 7,000 Christians this year alone? It's gotten so bad that President Trump is threatening to intervene and save the persecuted church in that country. Then we have Iran. The radical jihadist government there is now imposing nightly water rations in the capital, Tehran, a city of 10 million people. It's Iran's worst drought in over 50 years. And Iran's president just said that if no rain falls by the end of this month, Tehran may need to be evacuated. Folks, things always unravel into chaos for tyrannies that oppose the God of the Bible, like Iran's regime. But it's not just Africa and the Middle East where we see insanity unfolding. Look at France, where 52% of Jews are considering relocating thanks to the explosion of anti-Semitism there that's due in large part to mass Muslim immigration. Folks, do you see a pattern here? Christians and Jews targeted in the old slogan of radical Islam. First the Saturday people, then the Sunday people, playing out in real time. This is what our brave men and women in uniform are fighting against. Coming up next, Johnny Moore, president of JDA Worldwide and former faith advisor to President Trump, join me to lay out the problems and solutions to this growing radical Islamic wave. Take a look. Johnny Moore, always great to see you, my friend. And you and I were talking off camera. We are at a very dangerous moment in America, which is a story by Ben Lucca. The Loyal Front of Israel, safe haven for the Jewish people, which destroys anti-Semitism. Well, on the left, of course, a radical left, college campus mobs, etc. But on the right, Johnny, how concerned are you about this, and how big a problem is this for President Trump's coalition, for the MAGA movement going forward?
I mean, it's a serious moment. As an evangelical, immersed in evangelical culture, I mean, we are the largest single voting constituency in the United States, above all other voting constituencies. I don't see a material change among evangelicals. I do see conservative Catholics having some type of weird identity crisis on foreign policy, and I'm not sure where that lands. I think on evangelicals, we're going to still be the stalwart supporters of the U.S.-Israel relationship. I mean, we are Zionist at our heart, always have been. But this whole situation that's emerging in front of our eyes in the social media world is an indication of how important it is that we teach the next generation the truth, because they're in the sewer of lies. And the fact is, it says that some of those who are telling lies, it's not just about Israel, it's not just about American foreign policy. I was watching one of these podcasters earlier today, and they were being an apologist for Maduro in Venezuela. Like, this person is allegedly a conservative. There's nothing conservative about any of that. But if we don't know our history, and we don't teach our children the truth, and we don't believe in the Bible, and we don't focus on very, very fundamental things, then this virus of anti-Semitism, this innate hatred of the Jews that comes from the pit of hell and Satan himself, will always find a little corner. And I'll be honest, Eric, I thought we'd kill off the Christian version of this. But it's coming back, and it will fail.
Johnny, how serious is replacement theology as a problem? I mean, it seems to be gaining steam. Much of it's social media-driven, as you mentioned, but this concept of replacement theology, God's done with Israel, he's done with the Jews, they've been cast aside. How dangerous is that? How prevalent is that becoming in some quarters of the church?
I mean, the irony is like, when we had this conversation, say, 10 or 15 years ago, 20 years ago, it was a theological conversation. It was a replacement theology versus, like, whatever. Now, people don't even know theology at all. Like, it's not replacement theology versus, like, you know, traditional Christian evangelical theology. It's just, like, people are getting their quick takes from the internet. They're hearing things from people that they should be able to trust. They're being manipulated. By the way, there are also foreign governments that are adversaries of the United States that are involved in fueling some of this. I mean, frankly, what it is it's an attempt to split the MAGA. I mean, to split it in half. On one side, those who are true MAGA, true America First MAGA, people that are the, as the kids say or used to say, the OGs, like the original MAGA. And by the way, you know, I met Donald Trump in 2011, okay? I cold called the 1-800 number on the Trump website to ask and see if he would come speak at Liberty University. And Donald Trump called me back himself within an hour. And a few months later, a few weeks later, he was speaking to the first large evangelical crowd that he had ever spoken to, over 10,000 students at Liberty University. So no one's going to lecture me on Donald Trump. People like me have been there from the very beginning. The people who are promoting this anti-Semitism are people that have volumes and volumes and volumes of criticism. They're come-by-lately friends who fly with the wind of whatever benefits them. But we're not like that as Christians.
Yeah.
Because our commitment to this incredible country, unrivaled in human history, based on a Judeo-Christian foundation, is in our core because we know the truth. We know history. We know the Bible. But just as quickly as we don't teach it to another generation, we're going to lose this heritage. It's a wake-up call for everyone.
Yeah, and you are teaching it to the next generation, Johnny. Pepperdine University, your new post, Liberty University, long running, of course, your work there. What do you see among Generation Z right now? I see revival stirring there, especially in the wake of Charlie Kirk's murder, of course. Revival stirring, but on the flip side, is there some maybe ignorance about Israel or a misunderstanding of Israel among the generation as well that you're trying to tap into, obviously, and change that? But it seems kind of like a double-edged sword. There's revival. It's great. They're coming to Jesus, but there's this kind of ignorance about Israel in some corners of Gen Z.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the most incredible moments of history. Like, we're seeing more people interested in faith than at any point, certainly in my lifetime, I think in my parents' life, certainly back to the Jesus people, you know, period. Like, that was the last great revival. We're seeing people searching all over the world. As I travel all around the world all the time, I see it everywhere. And yet, it's also a precarious time, because when people search, they find what they find. And with AI coming in and people consuming social media, people not reading books anymore, parents not teaching their children, like, you know, as Christians, we can learn a lot from the Jewish community about, like, the practice of Shabbat, of reading the Bible consistently, of knowing your story, of being anchored in history, of remembering. I mean, we're sitting here as Christians having a conversation at a meeting of the Republican Jewish Coalition. When I'm in environments like this, like, I learn things I want to take into my own Christian life. I'm not interested in mixing Christianity and Judaism. I'm a proud Christian, but there's a lot of things that we left behind that we can learn from. And if we learn these things, we pass them along. And at the heart of it is education. And so you're exactly right. I mean, it is, when I completed my assignment in Gaza this summer, or about a month ago, I decided, like, I wanted to focus on educating the next generation. And so I joined Pepperdine University. We created a new Master's in Middle East Studies program. And then you mentioned Liberty University now starting a center for Israel. Liberty University is the most Zionist of any evangelical school on the planet. But you can't take this stuff for granted. If we don't teach our children the truth, there will always be wolves crawling around waiting for an opportunity to slide in. And I can tell you, it's not just like coincidental that the most powerful, successful, wealthy country in human history happens to also be the one country that Israel can always rely upon. And it's because of that strength, because of that relationship, that we're also able to bring peace across that entire region. And I'm not giving away that heritage that I inherited. I'm going to pass it on.
Thank you.
Going forward for the Abraham Accords, could we see some movement, do you believe, in the coming months, in the next year or so?
Yeah. We're not only going to see the expansion of the Abraham Accords. We're going to see a historic, unprecedented peace that's going to include countries no one expected. And this is what happens when you have a president who knows who his friends are and isn't ashamed of his friends. A president who makes decisions based upon the facts, not whatever the political winds are blowing. And in the Middle East, I mean, I'm very close to Israel, I'm very close to the Jewish community, and on the same token, I'm very close to the Arab community, and I spend a lot of time in the Gulf, and I talk to all these leaders, and talk to all their media outlets. I've met every single minister of Islamic affairs, I think, in the Muslim world on multiple occasions. And I can tell you, they all pray every day and desperately want peace, and they think peace is now possible because we have a president of the United States, to quote them, who can speak the language of the Middle East. And so we have to pray for it. It's not going to be easy. This was a terrible, painful 2 years that brought incredible, incredible suffering on so many people. We have a lot of work to do, but we have a historic opportunity. We aren't just seeing the end of this terrible war and the freeing of the hostages. We're not only seeing the total elimination of Iran's ring of fire around Israel and an eight-front war, including the information war, we're seeing a new door of peace crack open, and I think people are going to be surprised at what happens.
And now that it happens, President Trump, he truly is the leader of the free world, and peace through strength always works. And we're seeing it again in real time. Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, what a few months. What a 2025 you've had, my friend. Talk about the accomplishments, the challenges, and the strain on your family. I mean, you received death threats. This was not an easy thing, but God led you to do that.
I mean, there's a few rules in life. 2 + 2 = 4. Every day the sun rises and the sun sets. And if a terrorist organization and the grand poobahs of the United Nations are against you, you're probably doing the right thing. And that's the story of the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. While we're sitting here, what happened was nearly 200 meals were delivered for free to the people of Gaza. Hamas wasn't able to steal one truck. Millions of high nutritional food supplements given to children. The United Nations, by the way, the UNICEF wouldn't give GHF, the nutritional supplements, to give to children, despite the fact that the U.S. probably paid for it. So we picked up the phone, we called Samaritan's Purse, and Franklin Graham sent multiple plane loads, and we distributed those to hungry children in the Gaza Strip. And for sure, no question, while the singular mission of GHF was to feed as many people as possible, and we touched half of the people in the Gaza Strip, a million people, maybe more, in the Gaza Strip, that was the one mission accomplished, but it also created the conditions that helped President Trump end the war, free the living hostages, almost all of the deceased hostages, we pray they all come home, and created the environment to pave the way for peace in the Middle East. And so, yeah, it was hard, and it was never about me. I don't want to make it about me. And in fact, you know,
but there was sacrifice involved. It was a difficult thing for you.
Well, the real sacrifice were the brave Gazans who helped us help their people, and they lost their lives. I mean, I had people threaten my life and threaten my family, and one time I had 62 protesters outside of my house. giving every car driving into our neighborhood, they gave them a flyer with our address on it saying that a war criminal lives. And it's just a bunch of nonsense. Yeah. But it was a small sacrifice to pay to do our part in fulfilling. I mean, what is more Christian than feeding people who need food and also doing it in a way that helps bring a war to an end and freeing the captives? Like, for the rest of my life, these 3 months, I'll look back and be grateful to God that I had the opportunity to be a part of this.
What did you learn about this mechanism? It seems coordinated in a sense, for sure, that just is all in on disinformation and propaganda against Israel.
People don't realize it yet. The historians will realize it. Maybe we'll realize it soon. But we just lived through the first world information war. We had World War I, we had World War II, we had the Cold War. We may be in a second Cold War, depending upon how you look at it, with our relationship with certain other countries, including China. Probably not. But what we just experienced was the first world information war, where adversaries of the United States, where Hamas managed to embed their allies and media outlets all over Europe, where every single lie was given an audience and therefore given credibility by what used to be the most credible media outlets in the world. It was insidious, it was expansive, it was global, and it sought one thing, which was an anti-Semitic goal of seeing the eradication of the Jewish community, the people of Israel, and everyone that stood with them, and to demonize anyone who didn't have that point of view. I mean, think about the irony of us. At one point, the only people giving food on a massive scale to the hungry Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. And yet they made us the enemies? Why did they make us the enemies?
And the UN was a bottleneck, by the way.
I mean, actually, they interfered with the UN from the top to the bottom is and was corrupt. And when we started shining a bright light in those dark places, one day, we'll tell the full story, but they didn't like it very much. And I ended up having all these, like, unofficial meetings. They were crying uncle because they weren't used to the criticism. And in the end, we ended up working together. And why did we work together? We worked together because the truth is, we actually really did want to help people. That's why we showed up every day. And often we would look to our right and we'd look to our left and we'd say, where's the United Nations? You know where they were? They were at the microphones criticizing the United States and Israel while we were in the sands of the Gaza Strip risking our lives in order to feed hungry people. And so the UN, I don't think it should go away, but it needs to be improved. It needs to be reformed, and if it's not reformed, it ought to be shut down.
Coming up, Johnny Moore exposes the ongoing targeted violence against Christians in Nigeria.
Shift 60 hours a week.
Avoid surgery potentially or medications. That really makes those 12-hour shifts go.
Hope
And that's the greatest gift that you can give on Hanukkah to any Jewish person.
I had to get that.
But it's just free. Weighted hardship.
I mean, if you'd like to go even deeper into showing your love and support for the Jewish people, please don't wait. Partner with Jewish Voice today. We'd love to get this Hanukkah into your hands as a practical way for you to identify with the Jewish people in this season. Every gift you give has a profound impact. You'll receive resources that enrich your walk with the Lord, and together, we extend God's love to the Jewish people in need around the world. Take a look at just a few of the many lives you're helping to change when you partner with Jewish Voice.